And it is 11 a.m. in the West Coast, it's 2 p.m. in the East Coast, and it's 8 p.m. in the Middle East. Today it's March 9, 2015, and this is Orly Benny Davis, and this is The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we're going to talk about the Women Day that we all celebrated yesterday. And we're going to keep on going, talking about the Iranian deal or not deal that we are all trying to understand and you know, maybe get to some sort of conclusion. And then we'll keep talking about the agriculture in Israel and why the food tastes so good in the Holy Land. And it's really amazing because there are so many topics that comes to life every time in the show. And, you know, today this topic, you know, this topic really represents what this land is all about. And I wanted to you all to share it. Now, let's think about what's going on. Last week, Prime Minister Netanyahu spoke in front of a joint Congress. It was incredible. Incredible honor to have the Prime Minister. It was incredible, even amazing, momentous, where we had to sit and listen, and the President could not join, of course, the Congress. Sometimes protocol is on in the middle of us, on, you know, without even wanting, create some sort of diplomatic crisis, but I'm sure it's all behind, you know, and past. The important thing is to keep our eyes on the ball and think what happened in Geneva and how the talks with Iran are proceeding. We had some segment of John Kerry about the situation, and I hope we can understand a little more about what's going on.
We also talked about the Iran nuclear negotiations, where we are together with the P5+1 members, where we are all focused simultaneously on the need to elicit from Iran answers to questions about their nuclear program, not just answers for today, but answers that are capable of lasting well into the future in order to be able to provide people with a confidence that the program is indeed a peaceful nuclear program. We continue to believe, all the members of the P5+1, that the best way to deal with the questions surrounding this nuclear program is to find a comprehensive deal, but not a deal that comes at any cost, not a deal just for the purpose of a deal that meets the test of providing the answers and the guarantees that are needed in order to know that the four pathways to a nuclear bomb have been closed off. And that is the task. And we hope it is possible to get there, but there's no guarantee. Sanctions alone are not going to provide that solution. What needs to happen is that Iran needs to provide a verifiable set of commitments that its program is in fact peaceful, and that average people and experts alike, looking at that verifiable set of commitments, have confidence that they are sustainable, that they are real, and that they will provide the answers and guarantees well into the future. Any deal must close every potential pathway that Iran has towards fissile material, whether it's uranium, plutonium, or a covert path. The fact is, only a good, comprehensive deal, in the end, can actually check off all of those boxes. Now, I want to be clear about two things. Right now, no deal exists. No partial deal exists. And unless Iran is able to make the difficult decisions that will be required, there won't be a deal. Nothing is agreed until everything is agreed. That is the standard by which this negotiation is taking place, and anyone who tells you otherwise is simply misinformed. Now, we are concerned by reports that suggest selective details of the ongoing negotiations will be discussed publicly in the coming days. I want to say clearly that doing so would make it more difficult to reach the goal that Israel and others say they share in order to get a good deal. Israel's security is absolutely at the forefront of all of our minds, but frankly, so is the security of all the other countries in the region. So is our security in the United States. And we are very clear that as we negotiate with Iran, if we are able to reach the kind of deal that we're hoping for, then it would have to be considered in its entirety and measured against alternatives.
That's very well spoken. That's a very well spoken, John Kerry. Secretary Kerry, somebody that I trust, somebody that I met many years ago, and I know for a fact that he's a trustworthy individual and a man of his word and honor, and there is intent and is negotiation surely represents the well-being of the world, the global security of the world. And I must say that his standing in front of the camera and talking about the all out, he's talking all out about the deal, about the comprehensive deal, about the full ways that exist to block any nuclear bomb for Iran, and the way that, you know, to step sanction will be only when Iran will verify and set a commitment to give us something that we can feel secure and sure, if we're expert or if we're not, that Iran does not threat global peace. It's about the next stage that we all have to worry about. It's the stage where they have to come to the conclusion that having a nuclear deal actually threatens their security and the all safety of the region. And sure enough, nobody is going to stand aside if something really wrong will happen. And there is no intention of nobody in his clear mind and in reasonable time to start anything that nobody can see and understand how it's going to turn around. It will be really, really great if at this day, and if in this stage, you know, this time, Iran will come to agree to dismantle her nuclear aspiration facilities and come join the world in a peaceful coexistence. It's about time they come back. Since Iran turned her back on America, since Iran kidnapped those hostages some 30 years ago, the world are missed as a good friend, missed in a good people that were captured by the hands of somebody that misled her with the wrong policy. Iran has a chance, you know, after so many years, to get back to her good side with the world. And there is no reason for her to really think that she can do better trying to undermine America, the powerful nation around that gather, that try so hard, Britain, France, Germany, to try so hard to come to conclusion without having any resource of any other measures. It's not easy, it's not easy. But some people know math, and the math is clear. Give it up, finish with this, cut a good deal for everybody, and come back to the table among mankind. Everybody needs it. It will be the enlightened way to do. The people there deserve to live in freedom. The people in the world need to feel free, not to be obscured by all this incredible movement of aggression against the world. Israel had to do its task to show the world that it wasn't working the way she saw so clear. Maybe because we are involved, maybe we understand better, maybe, we have a different understanding because we live here. But America did trust us, and like we trust her, and understood that once we insist so hard, it's so hard, it was such a hard task to face the music of all the people and condemnation of everybody saying whatever they were saying about the Prime Minister's speech, and understand that we have to do the right thing. And if there is a messenger, Prime Minister was the messenger of God at that point. Tell them to dismantle the nuclear inspiration. Tell them to stop it. If they do that, the whole world will be happy, will be joyful, and will be back doing the right thing, taking care of the world, the future, and the children of this world that do deserve some peace of quiet from this agony of this craziness that sometimes take over our life. Let's get to some music, and then we're going to talk about the Women's Day that we had to celebrate yesterday in so many forms and so many flowers, so many songs that tells us how women are so great. So let's get some music, and we'll be right back. And sure enough, on celebration of Women's Day on March 8, 2015, we are celebrating the men today, saying it's the men world. And sure enough, it is the men world. And nothing I can say to change it. I'm speaking on the radio. This is something that, a privilege that was given to me, of course, but with consent of men, So I'm very thankful. But the truth of the matter is women need to have some more freedom to be, or maybe get some more credit from the men to execute what they're learning, what they can be to the world. Without the men agreement and the men consent and the men help, she cannot make it. And many women, get into the divorce world because of that condition. She's torn between the house, the husband, and between what she's learning. And when she proceeds in learning, she knows that she cannot go back. There is one saying that Congressman Joe Wilson just put it up. He said, something that you cannot do about knowledge, you cannot go back to ignorance. Once the woman got knowledge, she knows she cannot go back to ignorance. And when you're asking the woman to settle, and you're asking the woman, not to go and do whatever she wished to do, or her ideas or understanding of the world, ask her to drive that she goes forward, make her, you actually constrain her to make a decision between, the man she loves the house she would like to be with her husband and kids, and the freedom that and the rest of the world that she, it's an unknown world for her because she needs to discover it once she's allowed to. Instead of giving her the opportunity, really, the consent to be her, to deliver what she can deliver, and bring take her back home, loving. What's the big deal? She does it for the man, you know. Women do it for the man. They're goody two-shoes in the morning, said, have a great day, darling. And they really mean that because your success, the man's success, is the woman's success. Absolutely. Absolutely. Every wife in the world will second me by saying the husband's success is her success. But for some reason, the man didn't grab that women's success is their success too. Because they're part of the same coin, you know, and this is the two sides. Like the sharing that we just talked about, Doug, the sharing that didn't really, you know, dawn to them, that sharing the burden of the house, the burden of the kids, sharing the success is a part of the world. So to all the women and dad outside there that want to be somebody, I must tell you something. Stop fighting it. It's not going to help. You are going to do it anyway. So if you feel guilty or not, you need to be who God bless you to be. And if knowledge is what you seek, knowledge you should get. And if it's the pursuit of, I'm sorry, my English going out of my way today. And if it's knowledge and your horizons that you want to have, of course you will find them. Because nothing can stop you. Sometimes it's God's way to change the world. If you guys think that's about change that everybody is asking and praying for, how we want to change, you know, at the end of the day, God will change the world on you. But just make sure that you get what you want and this is what you wish and you pray for. Because sometimes it's like we wish you and we hope that whatever you seek, you will get. It's the what you want for real and you love. So women, I'm one of those women that try everything with the hardest heart. And did everything in the world to help my parents, to help my brother and sisters, to help my husband, to help my friends, to be there for the world, to help my children, to help my friend's children, to help my neighbor, my friend's children. It's important for me to do so. And nothing I can do about it. It's me. And every time I come out and I want to have more responsibility, I find that, you know, responsibility is something that God's only gives. And I pray for the right responsibility because maybe I don't need more responsibility because I take it. I'm responsible for this show. I'm responsible for you to listen to the truth, to the impossible truth. To the one that says to you, guys, it's enough fighting. It's enough. We can make this world better. I can fight with you, but what then? You know, I know Matt. And my Matt says, at the end of this game, I want to be happy. And if you try to lead me to another war to get the children under shelter again, the Middle East, or try, you know, to see all those horrifying picture of children without shelter. I don't want that. I want to try to take care of what needs to be taken care of. I want to solve the world problem, not to come and create a new one. For God's sake, you guys get a grip. We already, this generation did so much for the world. It took over. How Gerald O'Donnell said in the last show that we spoke to him, he said this generation was so great. It consumed everything, took every good corner, destroyed it, and now they're fighting for the big war. How? Let's see if we can destroy it all. Well, I'm a mommy. I'm a sister. I'm a daughter. And I tell you, enough is enough. We, the women of the world, not going to stand for it. It's not because we're going to make any revolution or anything. We're not going to help you destroy more, but we're not going to participate. We are not going to be a part of this destruction. So you guys get a hold of yourselves and start coming to term, whatever you want to do, but play nice and come to term with the fact that this world is already enlightened. The women that were sitting in the dark and nobody was teaching them to read and write, now they read and write and they know that there is a future and it's not the fighting. And you guys, every time you choose your ego above our well-being, every time you decide to fight a war instead of talk it over, it's easy to bomb something. Okay, let's go bomb them. Let's level the place. Oh, let's get rid of them. Then we have men, women without husbands, children without their fathers. What the heck? And it's all after on our lap. It's all after in the women's responsibility to cater to ill, to the wounded, to take care of the orphans. It's all women. You guys just create a small work instead of giving us the opportunity to be more free. Oh, that's a nice trick. No, thank you. We're calling you off. We don't want to take care of more wounded. We want to solve, we want to find a cure for the disease that's coming around. We want to stop anything, the mistakes, their mistakes. We want to help baby come to the world. That's what we want. We want to bring light. We want to bring happiness. We want to create new songs. We want to go dancing. We want to go have fun. It's about time. Those dreadful years of a clash of economy, clash of civilization, clash of whatever you want to call it, have been, melting our patience away. We learn to pray. We learn to help. We learn everything in the book. It's about time you start listening to us. We are here. And we are more than 50% of this universe, and we deserve to be a part of the decision-making. Women of the world, we take so much on our shoulder every day. We help, and we also, your connection to God every time, we remind you there is a God. And God knows, those the women that bring light to this house, because they are the one who pray for God's salvation. So it's enough. Start listening to us. Stop going after your ego. And there is a very, very good quote in the prayer of the book. Every day they pray in the prayer book of the Jewish people. I don't know how it's in the Christian. Somebody could tell me, but I'm sure it's the same because they all pray to the same God. There is a saying, don't go after your eyesight that your heart likes because it brings you astray. I just translated it. It's not directly the same word. It means your sight, your eyes, whatever you want, you like. Oh, your heart really thinks, oh, I want that. When you want that, means that you're distrayed. Maybe it's a test. Maybe it's something that you're not supposed to. So get a grip with your inside, with your conscious self. And just remember, you are here to do something. Start making something good. Good morning, California. I hope it will be a best day for you. let's get to get some music on. And we are back on BBS Radio, Distance Impossible Truth, and this is Orly Benny Davis. I'm so happy you join us, and I'm happy to introduce to you something that all the world is talking about, but actually it's the best kept secret, because the people who know, and the people who don't, just don't. The food in Israel. Something interesting that, you know, everybody that visits to the land, the Holy Land, get impressed by. You know, they have incredible cuisine, and now they learn how to cook in variety of a compilation of 70 countries that came along to become, you know, to become one Jewish state. You know, the Jewish people live all over the world and take and cook a lot. That's something everybody who knows the Jew can understand. But in Israel, we have a different edge. We have a blessing of the land. And if you know the Bible you read, and you should, because that's your way to talk to God and your God to talk to you, you know that Israel, the promised land, is the land of milk and honey. Now, everybody thinking, what milk and honey, you know, does milk get out? Well, you have cows, of course, but honey, how you have, so it's the bees. But where you got the bees, they got the honey, it's from the flowers, and so forth, so forth. Israel is blessed with something very sweet and very incredible. As I mentioned once, you know, on the Mount of Moriah, the one on Temple Mount, where the holy temple used to stand and will be, as the Bible prophecy will say, will be erected one day, there is a fragrance that comes from the trees around, or the blossoming of the flowers or the grass. I don't know what it is. But the truth of the matter, the land and its seeds. And this year it's a peaceful year because no growth. We have to put the land to rest on the seventh year. And this is the year that she's resting. No flowers, you know, need to be picked and nothing. We just let her be. She gives us the best food ever. And we're talking about food, we're talking about the taste of food. You know, in these days where we have so many engineered food in the world, we are actually worried about the seeds and about the, you know, the creation of new seeds. You know, there is a, you know, technical stuff that goes around and mix seeds and make flowers something, and you know they have this idea of having the root and of the fruit having two different kind of type, if they can just breed them together and match them and make them flourish. But you know what happened with the breed? They lose their taste. So it's not something that I'm going to endorse, of course. I'm going to endorse only creating more fruits and more vegetables. Their natural seeds, the natural, you know, taste, and try to preserve those seeds for the future. Because once you engineer fruit, you cannot get seeds from them anymore. And what happened, it's like there is no continuation. And they say to me that if you engineer seeds, fruits with their seeds, there might be new seeds. Well, I still need to have proof for that, but probably they're right, because what? Who am I to know? So I want to introduce you to the world of agriculture in Israel. You know so much about what Israel is all about, but I'll tell you what Israel still is all about, but nobody's, you know, there or speak about loudly and clearly like they should. Israel is the land of milk and honey, and the agriculture is the crown of it all. let's get this segment so we can have some idea of it.
In 1867, Mark Twain toured the land of Israel, known back then as Palestine. Here's how he described it. A desolate country whose soil is rich enough, but is given over wholly to weeds. A silent, mournful expanse. There was hardly a tree or a shrub anywhere. Palestine sits in sackcloth and ashes, desolate and unlovely. Today, Mark Twain wouldn't even recognize this land. Out of rocky soil, out of swamps, and even out of deserts, Israelis have created gardens, vineyards, and farms with some of the most innovative techniques in the world.
It was just this country with incredible dynamism and energy and excitement and food and people and a sense of family and ultimately a sense of belonging.
It's been said that the modern state of Israel was born on the kibbutz. So it's only natural that much of Israel's innovation was born there as well.
The kibbutz is the cornerstone in a lot of ways of a lot of things in Israeli society.
People came back wanting to create a collective and an equal society. And these kibbutzim became a very, very effective way to defend the land, to start getting young people engaged in agriculture. Remember, Jews were forbidden in most countries of the world to actually own land or to work the land. Jews couldn't be farmers. To all of a sudden see a generation of Jews farming the land in a collective environment, it was incredible.
Before Israel even became a state, Jews by the thousands came to live there on communal farms. But when they arrived in the Promised Land, it wasn't exactly flowing with milk and honey. The coastal plains were swampy, the Galilee and the Judean hills were rocky, and the southern half of the country was mostly desert.
Since the people of Israel left our homeland 2,000 years ago, the area was mismanaged. So we want to preserve and rehabilitate this holy land.
The early Jewish settlers faced a number of obstacles, from bad soil to Bedouin raiders. But they faced an even bigger enemy that threatened to destroy the Jewish state before it began. In the early decades of the 20th century, Israel was a breeding ground for mosquitoes carrying malaria. They overtook the coastal plains and the Jordan Valley, the only land available for Jews to buy since the local Arabs had decided it was uninhabitable. In 1920, more than a third of all Jewish residents of Palestine had malaria. So with no other choice, they went to work. They drained the swamps and sprayed the land and changed the flow of water in irrigation canals to interrupt the mosquitoes' breeding. They were so successful that a commission from the League of Nations visited Palestine to learn what they did. Less than 20 years after Israel's statehood, the country was officially malaria-free. Once the threat of malaria was gone, Jewish settlers were free to focus on making the desert bloom. In the coastal plains, citrus groves replaced the swamps. And the Jordan Valley, once the center of the malaria epidemic, now became the country's breadbasket. The Negev Desert blossomed with newly planted forests and vineyards. And the Arava, once the most arid part of Israel, became the site of a flourishing vegetable industry. All of this was accomplished in the first 20 years of Israel's statehood. In that time, they more than doubled their standard of living. And now they're using their experience to help other countries. In the 1970s, they created a new breed of cherry tomato that's disease resistant and has a longer shelf life. They also bred a new kind of potato that can be grown in hot, dry climates and irrigated by salt water. These vegetables are now being grown in dry countries like Jordan, Egypt, and Morocco. Israeli scientists not only found ways to grow more crops, they also found new ways to preserve them. GrainPro cocoons provide an inexpensive way for farmers to keep their grain market fresh by keeping out water, air, and insects. The Israeli cocoons are being used in Africa, the Far East, and even Pakistan, a nation with no diplomatic ties to Israel.
The kibbutz over time began to change. Israeli society began to change, became more capitalistic, became more focused on free enterprise and entrepreneurship and the individual taking responsibility for himself and therefore benefiting the overall society. There have been many very exciting companies that have been built in kibbutzim.
One of those companies is now doing business around the world.
If you went to the average Israeli 10, 12 years ago and said to them organic, they wouldn't have a clue what you were talking about. Here we've been doing organic farming for over 40 years.
Kibbutz Stei Eliyahu was founded by German refugees in 1934, and many of their early members were survivors of the Holocaust.
So the biggest problem that we had when we started the organic was, what do you do if you're not using chemicals? How do you get rid of the pests?
Their answer was to fight bugs with more bugs.
Every single thing in nature has a natural enemy. What eats or what attacks these pests that are attacking our crops?
They started breeding different insects in the bomb shelter of the kibbutz. The idea was to breed predators to destroy the pests that ate their crops. The result was a new company called BioBee.
We went to the Israeli farmers. We said, you want to buy some bugs? They said, what, are you crazy? We don't have enough bugs in the field. You want us to buy bugs?
Eventually, they won over farmers in Israel and in 32 other countries as well. In California, 60% of the strawberry fields are treated with products from BioBee. The company also found a way to deal with one of the region's most devastating insects, the Mediterranean fruit fly.
We take the males of the species and we sterilize them. And then we release the sterile males into the environment. There's no future generation. And slowly, slowly, we lower the population without using harmful chemicals.
They also solved another agricultural problem, how to pollinate greenhouse plants.
The classic example we like to give is tomato plants. Tomato plants in nature, in the fields, are pollinated by the wind. In Israel, the majority of our tomatoes are not grown in the fields. They're grown in greenhouses. And in a greenhouse, in a climate-controlled environment, you don't have that wind. You don't have the natural pollination. We had to find other methods of pollination.
Their solution was to breed bumblebees.
They collect pollen for food. They have to go and work even in cold weather conditions. They don't have stores of honey in the hive. They have to go and work. We're saving the farmer money because instead of paying people, the bees are doing the work. And the bees, unlike people, they don't miss a single flower. So once the farmers started using the bees for pollination, the yield of the tomato crops increased by 25%. In Hebrew we say, Marabu Ma'asech Elokim, you know, how great and wonderful are your creations, God. And this really shows that every single thing has a reason. There's a purpose for everything, these tiny little things, and look how much good they do for us, for the world, for the farmers, for the environment. It's really, really amazing.
Farmers at Stei Eliyahu not only targeted insects, they also found a creative way to get rid of rodents as well.
What we used to do is basically used to take poison in a bottle, in a teaspoon, and somebody's job was to walk up and down the rows, and every time they saw a mouse hole, to take a teaspoon of poison and throw it down the hole. Now, obviously, that's not ecologically friendly. On top of that, if it rains or if we irrigate our fields, all that poison's going in the grounds. So we said, what is a natural solution to rodents? And the natural solution that we found is the barn owl. The barn owl is an amazing raptor. Two owls can capture an average of 2,000 to 5,000 mice a year. Okay, that's a lot of rodents.
There was just one problem with the owls.
They fly away. And one of the places they would fly to is Jordan, which is very close by. In Jordan, they were shooting them. In Arab folklore, the barn owl is a harbinger of death. And they're very superstitious about barn owls. So they see in a barn owl, they shoot it. So very simply, we went to Jordan, and we invited the Jordanian farmers to come to Stei Eliyahu to see what we were doing here. This was over 20 years ago. And today we have over 2,600 nesting boxes across the country. Numbers keep growing. But also it's become a wonderful program of regional cooperation, also with Jordan, also with the Palestinian Authority. This has been amazing, amazing success story. We tell the people it's not the dove bringing peace anymore to the Middle East, it's the barn owl. We're a light unto the nations. We're supposed to be anyway. If we want to really save the environment, if we really want to help the world, then we can't keep these things to ourselves. We have to share these things. We have to share this knowledge. And I think by helping others, we're helping ourselves as well.
And I guess we are back. It's incredible how fast it was. I hope we are all together again.
We are.
It's Orly Benny Davis, and this is BBS Radio, and we just listened to the incredible story about flourishing the land, the Holy Land, Israel, with some incredible way of innovation of the land. What Mark Twain said in the other century, he said that was the land desolated. And there is a quote in the book always, you know, people are trying to fight and kick Israel out of this land, the Holy Land. And they forgot one thing, that every time the Jews left, it was desolated, because it's like a mother that, you know, her kids are not in the house and she's all worried and doesn't do anything, just wait for them to come back. And sure enough, when they come back, they flourish it and she's happy again. So please, people of the world, don't just let this creation be. This creation of God that He gives us the power to enlighten other nations with innovation. We need to bring food to the table of other nations. We need to help them create a way to flourish the land. There is a perspective right now in Qatar. Qatar wants to flourish the desert. They're accumulating water. They're doing all kind of projects. But you guys know, and you can bet on, that the only way they're going to do that if Israeli will start playing a role, or if they're already behind the scene doing it. And for some reason, I can't fathom what happened to Qatar, because they were on the way of reconciliation. It was a way where we thought that Qatar will be the next peace accord, you know, in the region, with the region. And all this involvement with anti-humanity stuff, and I'm not calling anti-Israeli or anti-Jewish, because the Jewish state is made from so many people that for you guys to think that if you hurt somebody, you definitely will hurt a Jew. Well, I'll tell you, yesterday I just walked and bought a wonderful, wonderful cake that, you know, the Arabs from Nazareth do. And my daughter wanted that cake. And that cake is only in the Arab quarter of Jaffa. And I went there, and the owner was so happy. He brought an incredible, incredible tray of hot cake. And that hot cake was eaten in the car while we were driving, because it was so good. I can't believe that we need to even have to think, you know, if I can shop here or shop there. So when you think about hurting anybody, just remember, we're all mixed together. It's over. There, you cannot distinguish us. We are breed together. We are grown together. We love each other. We eat each other's food. We are the Holy Land. In the Holy Land, we live in peace and harmony. And God gave us this land that is the milk of Ani and Ani. And we're going to flourish it. Now, if you guys want to flourish the rest of the world, why don't you take some incredible, incredible team on your side. And just remember, why you want to have peace with Israel in this new century, the beginning of this century. Why we want this is a new century, it's because We are flourishing. This is our task. It's like we got the secrets to the enlightened one, to God maybe, and he gave this to us. He doesn't give it always, only if he wants, of course. So we need to be good too, remember. It's not the trick in the book is you have to be good to get God's grace. Can't be bad and expect God to be graceful to you. You know, that's erratic. It's normal. God is good. He's great. He's gracious. But God, if you mess with him, I'm not jealous. That's why the strongest, the most powerful, the most incredible man of humanity, the leader of the free world, they all bow before the Almighty. So, like the kings. And, you know, the monarchs, that they know where God gave them the monarchy in his hands. And what happened to her, to the monarchy, is always God's willing. And they will never fight it. Oh, they will fight the sin against you. You know, go try to threaten it, of course. That, but they won't fight God because they know if it's time, it's time. If they want to give back, to pass along that, you know, the crown to the next generation, God gives the signs. And sometimes when God gives the signs, it means that he lets you be yourself and you can pass on the throne to somebody else. This is the world we live in. If you listen to God, you'll be happy. So try to listen to your heart and remember, Jewish people, I don't know who made them sound so bad, but, you know, it's the world made them. But Israeli also, yeah, they have the chutzpah and all. It's because they come in our faces and they fight us. But we want to bring you good. We'll go and help you everywhere in the world. We are all over, you know, traveling to help. And then when you see Israeli, you know he's enlightened. Don't undermine him. And when you see Arab, just remember, he's the brother. They're also enlightened too. The only thing is we need to start making peace in this house of God. And, of course, all our Christian friends, they all come and understand. Listen, we have a great, great world. We just need to start enjoying it instead of destroying it. And I think that Qatar will do very well, you know, creating some new conference in Europe, maybe in a country where we think I'll help bring some expertise. Maybe we can cut some deals of peace accord before you know it. And then we'll help flourish the desert also there, grow tomato in greenhouses, help the pollination with the bees, raising 25% of the creation, you know. And then we'll pray to God, how much stuff he did for us, God. Let's get some music and we'll wrap it up after this. And it's tomorrow. It's going to be tomorrow. It's going to be a great day, I know for a fact, because so many miracles happening and so many changes are happening. And I know that our best friend, America, is going to be in play in greatest places in the world. And the world is start to coming to its senses, and we're going to be all on the same page for once and for all. And we're going to start talking business. It's about time to we create the engine to the next generation. We're gonna pay our debt of the past and start to create some new innovation to solve the problem, take care of our old people and take care of the future generation, and make sure that the places, the houses we live for them are good, happy, and safe. Safe is the key. Gonna be flourishing this time, you know. Something I promised to myself and I promised to you, that I'm gonna tell you how much I love you all the time. Here you will have always that time in the world when God is raining on the universe, and when love is all a part of it, and the thankful and the mercy and the grace that God gives will be resonated always, always in this space. This space is made for you. It's meant to be for the universe. It was created by miracle, because I'm not sure how I started all this. But I just know one thing, that I want to reassure you, that God is great and you're part of his plan. And your plan is his plan. And if you go and walk and make good, he'll bless you. If you create the goodness in the world, it bless all your surrounded and loved ones. Go, teach some kid a lesson, a good one lesson. Teach your expertise. Don't let them repeat the mistake of our history. Let's not repeat the mistake of our history. Let's learn together. And when John Kerry says, you know, he didn't want to fight, I believe that man, and I know he doesn't want to fight again now. So please let him help you guys all solve and come to an agreement. He deserved that. He fought all his life for the mankind and humanity. And I trust in him. And Israel trusts in him. And America does too. And I'm sure you guys have a wonderful, wonderful candidate too. So this is Orly Benny Davis. It's BBS Radio. And to all my friends, wherever you are, in the East Coast, in the West Coast, in Europe, in Australia, in Africa, in the Holy Land, and in the Middle East, I got so many of you, and I love you all. God bless you. God bless the world. We'll talk to you next week. And until then, be well. Go safe and be happy. You deserve it. Bye.